So, Kayla asked me to talk about wholeness and perfection on the spiritual path. Wholeness and perfection. And she asked me that because of some personal questions that she was having in her own life. But as we talked about it, I thought actually this may be a valuable thing to talk about for everybody. And it's not like I have the answer from Mount Olympus that I'm going to share with you, or Mount Sumeru that I'm going to share with you, and I know all this stuff that's going to be valuable and so on and so forth. So what I'd like to do is I'll share my thoughts with you for a while, and then I'd like to talk about some of the ideas that I've put out there, and then I'd like to return to the theme in 2 weeks. I'd like, for us to think about this and return to the theme in 2 weeks, because actually I think that there's a lot there, and there's a lot that's important, potentially there's a lot that's important there. So what do I mean when I'm talking about wholeness versus perfection? I mean, those are words that could mean a whole lot of different things. And in particular, I'm talking about wholeness and perfection in the sense of spiritual path, not just in ordinary, whatever that might mean. So my thinking about this has been ongoing actually for a long time, because I've been interested in Carl Jung for a long time. And Carl Jung talked a lot about the idea of wholeness. He really understood what we would call spiritual practice as kind of excavating parts of ourself that are buried, if you will, or unconscious, bringing them to the surface. And in doing so, being therefore in touch with or manifesting or expressing our deepest nature. And Buddhists would call that deepest nature our Buddha nature. So at that level, I don't think necessarily that Jung and the Buddhist tradition are disparate, although I think what Buddhists mean about Buddha nature is much more profound than what Carl Jung meant by Buddha nature. But that really doesn't make a whole lot of difference, I don't think. Anyhow, Jung understood that there was this kind of exploration of the subconscious which would make one whole and reveal what he would call the self to one, which is capital S self, not just our ordinary personality, but our deepest nature. And he understood that self, capital S self, to be very similar to what many religions referred to as the divine or the holy. He didn't exactly want to say it's the same thing as God. He kind of drew some distinctions, and I don't want to get into a whole thing about Carl Jung, but he really kind of understood the self as an image of God within, but not exactly the same thing as God within, which is an important distinction. Because he was also very sensitive to the way in which people could get inflated in their experiences and in their ideas. Now, he did have another idea, though, that's particularly relevant to what I'm talking about this evening. He said he thought that people basically could be understood as having four types of functions for understanding the world, four characteristic ways of understanding their experience of the world, which he described as thought, feeling, intuition, and sensation. And thought, we know what thought means. It means, like the rational way of understanding the world. But what he meant by feeling is not like sentiment, but a way of understanding the world and making judgments about the world, which he understood to be rational in the sense that it was conscious and it was discerning, but it wasn't based upon sort of logical kind of analysis. It was based upon a different type of analysis. An example he used would be something like, well, the president feels it's not a good idea to cut Social Security. Well, there's a lot of stuff that was going on when the president decided or felt something like that. Or I might feel like it's a good idea to sleep in tomorrow morning, based upon the fact that I'm going to stay up late tonight. So, that's that kind of feeling. Sensation means just directly perceiving things and seeing them for what they are. And intuition is much more a sense of You know things because you have a sense of things which is not rational. It comes from another part of you. Well, again, this is not a lecture on Jungian psychology. The point is, he felt that to be whole, you had to develop all four of those functions. But most people had one of those functions develop very well. One of those functions was totally unconscious, and the other two were semi-developed. So if you were really a rational thought person, probably your feelings were not too well developed, or intuition was not too well developed, would be the thought. But it might be that sensation is not well developed. The main point is, for him, completeness or wholeness was bringing all these functions together in as much consciousness as possible. So when I think about wholeness as apart from perfection, I think about being a whole person. And an example would be, well, maybe I should talk about perfection before I talk about wholeness, because I see them as being kind of a little bit opposed to each other. So I have an old friend who's now a very famous scholar, one of the most famous scholars of Buddhism living in the United States, who wanted to be the best. He set out to be the best. He wanted to be the best. He would take vows to do things like, I'm going to translate the entire commentaries in the Tibetan on the Buddhist scriptures. That's several hundred volumes, but he took a vow that he was going to translate them all. Well, this is a person who's on the path of perfection. He's going to be the best of everything. Well, what's the consequence of that? Everything else in his life fell away because there wasn't time for everything else, including his family, his social relations, in some respects his health, except that he's tough as nails, so his health didn't fail, and so on and so forth. I mean, when you follow the path of perfection, everything else falls away. If you're going to be a world-class athlete, there's just not going to be time and energy for very much else. Okay. So I see that the path of perfection in spiritual life is like that. Our Lama, Lhotse Rinpoche, has been on the path of perfection. He doesn't do anything else. The great lamas just don't do anything else. All they do is they pray, they meditate, they study, they teach. He takes walks for his knees. That's about it. He likes momos. But apart from that, those are pot stickers, Tibetan pot stickers. Apart from that, that's his thing. And so he's accomplished an unbelievable amount in terms of his personal development because of that. There isn't anything else, but it doesn't matter because he's a monk. For lay people, I think that that's a bit of a problem. I mean, think of the great athletes, the great musicians, the great artists. You know, the rest of their lives are often kind of questionable. So the alternative is the path of wholeness, which is, I think, the more, from my personal point of view, the more sensible path for the rest of us, which is some spiritual practice because it keeps us tuned in to our core self, a life, you know, with a family, a spouse, something like that, children, if you're into children, a job that you do your best at, gardening, if you like gardening, hobbies, whatever the case may be. And I think that that makes a person whole. And that in that wholeness, there's a different type of perfection. I think that if you become totally whole and totally perfect, you end up in the same place. But how many of us are going to get either totally whole or totally perfect? But it probably doesn't matter. What matters is the decision we make for how we're going to spend our time and what we're going to do with our time. Okay. So having said all of that, how does that fit in with Buddhism then? I sort of gave a hint when I was talking about Jung and the self and whatnot. But it's actually very complicated. And I spent the last couple of days thinking about this and what could I possibly say to answer this question. And I kept bumping up with some interesting kind of problems. And so, in fact, I think that the problems that I bumped into, which are what I'm interested in talking about, are particularly informative. A little tea, so I don't lose my voice totally. If you think about the Buddhist path, as we've talked about it, like the three principal aspects of the path, first aspect of the path is usually called renunciation, but it means realizing that the world as such is never going to be totally fulfilling to us for one reason or another. In some way, we're going to recognize, if we pay attention, that the world will not give us everything we expect. And it's actually not a deficit of the world, it's a deficit of us. We think it's a deficit of the world. It's not really. The world's just fine. The problem is with us. But anyhow, we're not going to get what we want from the world. If we thought we were going to get what we want from the world, we'd be living like Donald Trump or something like that. Who thinks he can get what he can get? Well, never mind. I don't want to get into Donald Trump. But anyhow, none of us has chosen to be worldly in that particular way. If we had, we wouldn't be here tonight. Second aspect of the path is what's usually called altruism or compassion, which is recognizing that we have relations with other people and that these things are deeply important in certain ways. And I've talked a lot about that in the past. I won't go into great detail right now. The third aspect of the path is wisdom. It's seeing reality for what it is and not being deluded by appearances. Everything appears to be certain ways, but the reality is it's not. The most obvious is everything seems to be solid and unchanging. That's one of the biggest delusions we deal with. Everything seems to be solid and unchanging. If I look at my teacup, it looks solid and unchanging. That's the way it presents itself to me. Now, if I think about it, I know it's not. I know it's not solid. I know it's in a process of changing. It came from somewhere. At one point, it was clay. It's going to end up in a landfill in pieces in the future, you know, or something along those lines. It's only in the moment that it looks like it's solid. If I step back and look at the big view, I realize it's in transition. Now it's spring. We see that the world changes around us constantly. And in spring, it changes in beautiful ways. Everyone is really happy, except for the skiers perhaps, happy when, you know, everything starts turning green and the crocuses come up and the tulips come out and all that kind of good stuff. So we see that the physical world around us is always changing. But on a moment-by-moment basis, we don't. Although this time of year, you can almost on a moment-by-moment basis look at the crocuses and watch them kind of jumping out of the ground. But, you know, my bamboo does that sometimes. It's like, I swear it's moving. Anyway, okay. So these three things function together in the Buddhist sense of the path. And if you think about the key is really wisdom. And what wisdom means is seeing things for what they are, as I said, but what that really means is getting rid of our misunderstandings. The secret in Buddhism is not what you accumulate, it's what you get rid of. What you get rid of is your wrong ideas or delusions or confusion and everything else. And one of the reasons as a teacher it's difficult to teach about Buddhism is basically it's saying, that's just get rid of that. That's wrong. It's not like you go to a university and it's sort of like, now I'm going to teach you in the introductory chemistry class how all this stuff works together, and then we're going to teach you the next thing. Then we're going to teach you the next thing and the next thing, and you accumulate all this knowledge. In the Buddhist path, it's sort of like we're playing this game, which is a little bit like, who was it, Persephone? Not Persephone, who was weaving and unweaving at night. It was Odysseus's wife. I can't remember her name now. It starts with a P, though.
Penelope.
Thank you, Penelope. Yeah. You know, Penelope was keeping the suitors away because she told them that, okay, I'm weaving this, whatever it was that she was weaving, and when it's done, if Odysseus hasn't come back, if Ulysses hasn't come back, I'll marry one of you. Went on for years because every night she would pull out all the work that she put in during the day. If you're a teacher of Buddhism, basically what you're doing is you're teaching all this complicated stuff and then you pull out the threads. Actually, that's your intention, is to pull out the threads in the beginning, but you have to get everybody's attention and orient them in a certain way, and then you pull out the threads, okay? So it's getting rid of, and so then the question is, if what Buddhism is about is getting rid of things, how does that fit into the idea of wholeness or perfection? Because then the most perfect person would be nobody. Everything would be gone, right? The whole person, what would a whole person be? A big empty circle? I mean, I'm not saying that that's the answer. I'm saying it presents a kind of a paradox. There's a meditation center in Marin County in Northern California, just north of San Francisco, called Spirit Rock Meditation Center. And they tweeted something that got my attention, and I was talking to a friend of mine about this, and he said, oh yeah, this is the most well-known quotation at Spirit Rock. It's even in my last book. And it's a quotation from Kalu Rinpoche, which I'm now going to mangle, but I'll give you the basic idea. The quotation was something like this. You live in complete, he was talking to a student, you live in complete delusion. That was for starters. totally deluded about what's going on. Right? If you knew what was going on, you'd realize that you are nothing. Now, we have to come back to what that nothing means. If you knew what was going on, you'd realize that you're nothing. And if you realized you're nothing, you'd be everything. And that's it. There isn't anything else. Now, what he meant was, I think, by the word nothing, he didn't mean like you're no good, you're nothing at all, as in that kind of nothing. What he meant was, he was using the word emptiness and it got translated as nothing. What I think he meant was, you're empty of everything you think you are. You're devoid of everything you think you are. Everything you think you are is what you're not, because you're full of delusions about what's happening. The main delusion that you're full of is that I'm here and the world's over there, and that's the problem. Here I am and there's the world. Well, it's clearly a delusion to think that you're not part of the world, except we go about every day thinking I'm not part of the world. I get up in the morning, I do this, that, and the other thing. I'm trying to figure out how to get on in the world as if I'm different than the world. And of course, because I've spent all my time trying to get on in the world thinking I'm different than the world comes around and goes, it's not the way it works, David, you know. It's like, wake up. We're all the same here, and everything's going to work out. But that's not the way I do things, or any of us, right? Okay. So I think what Kali Rinpoche was saying is, the main delusion that we have is we think that we're different than the world that we live in, that somehow my body is not part of this world, that my mind is not part of this world, that my consciousness is not part of this world. I mean, how crazy is that? If you think about it, it's insane. I don't live in outer space. I live here. I mean, even if it was outer space, I'd be part of the outer space world, right? So that's what he meant by you're totally deluded. We go through, it's the rain. We go through the world on a moment-by-moment basis in a state of complete confusion. And it's kind of like we're programmed that way. And as mammals, it's sort of, in a certain way, you know, survival-oriented to think about yourself as an individual and whatnot. So however we got to this place, we've got to this place, and it's sort of the problem. So Buddhism is about getting rid of that and recognizing that you are really one with everything, and that's great. Because if you're one with everything, then you've got nothing to lose. Because what can you possibly lose? Because you're everything. There's nothing that can possibly get lost. Of course, we don't think that. That's the problem. So what we need is to get rid of all the stuff that prevents us from knowing who we really are and feeling totally comfortable here. That's what Kali Rinpoche meant, I'm pretty sure. How does that fit into being whole or being perfect? Because we still, because we have all this kind of stuff and confusion, we're still in this process of doing something, you know, because I still wake up in the morning and I still think about things like paying the bills. I have to go get my hair cut. I don't have enough time to do this. I got that hassle over here. These people are doing that and I need to do this. And I got 25 emails to answer and I'm teaching 3 classes and I got 5 pissed off students. And it's like all this stuff is going on and like I'm running around frantically trying to do everything. Because why? Because I have to be doing something, right? It doesn't feel like it's just going to flow on its own. But is that really true? I mean, is that what keeps me from being whole? Is that what keeps me from being perfect? I don't know. So I'm going to sort of end things with a question. That's the question. And maybe we can talk about this a bit and you can think about it, because I think it's an important distinction and an important question and worth sort of chewing on for a couple of weeks, and then we'll come back and talk about it some more, and maybe I'll maybe even have some good ideas in a couple of weeks. So is that cool for the moment? So what I'll do then is